The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live.
It's a great Monday. Thanks for being with us. We have a jam-packed show today. Brett McMurphy from Stadium will be with us on the college football news that broke earlier today with Oklahoma and Texas bolting from the Big 12 over to the Southeastern Conference. What does this mean for Arizona State, the Fiesta Bowl, for U of A, for the Pac-12? If you're an Ohio State or Clemson fan, are you immediately bolting out of the Big Ten or the ACC to go to this new super conference? The shakeout, we'll get into it with Brett McMurphy. Evan Orshowitz will be with us. Evan on our staff, the Big O as we like to call him. Part of what he covers is the Coyotes inside and out. He has a terrific passion and great insight into what was a busy weekend. They trade Oliver Ekman-Larsson. They draft Shane Doan's son, new coach, building, a free agency coming up this week. There's a lot going on. Evan will be with us. He does a great job. That comes up at about 10:35. Opening comments are brought to you by Desert Financial Credit Union. Desert Financial Credit Union, taking care of you, taking care of your business. That is Desert Financial Credit Union. We appreciate their support. I don't even know where to start. There's just so much happening. This is opening week for the Cardinals, and Chandler Jones is the latest Cardinal to say, I want out of here. So I get a phone call back in April. It was April. And it's, you know, Chandler Jones is unhappy. You may want to work on this. Suns are winning. Long story short, he'll get through it. He's going to get in the last year of his deal. They'll figure it out. No. It comes out over the weekend. Yeah, I want out of here. Get me out of here. And then David Johnson this morning, you remember him, the former Cardinal running back. He goes on Twitter and says, hey, man, coming down here to Houston. Chandler Jones was hurt last year. Chandler Jones is on the north side of 30. The Cardinals, I'm sure, are saying, do we really want to give a long-term extension? And Chandler Jones is saying, look, man, I've given you the blood, guts, heart, soul. I've been the most productive player in terms of sacks in the NFL. I've got the numbers to back it up. And oh, by the way, you gave DeAndre Hopkins an extension. What about me? And unfortunately, and I'm not siding with the Cardinals, I'm not siding with Chandler. I usually side with the player because the NFL is all about just grinding up guys, chewing them up, spitting them out, and then moving on. But that's what's going on here from my view. This is supposed to be a week of optimism, right? Isn't this supposed to be a week of, hey, it's the start of pro football. We are excited for the start of the season. And instead, we're sitting here with Chandler Jones wants out. Jordan Hicks wants out. DeAndre Hopkins is not going to get his shot. He's not happy about that. And then Larry Fitzgerald's status is up in the air. So there's a lot of things other than, hey, man, we're going to go out. We're going to win football games. We have a really tough division to be a part of. There's a lot of things away from the football field that are being looked at, and can they bring all of them together, get inside the locker room, and figure them all out? It's not the smoothest way to start out a camp. They have their run test tomorrow, and then on Wednesday, their first practice. Tomorrow, we'll be joining you from the W Hotel in Los Angeles, where it will be Pac-12 Football Media Day, and I want to turn over to that now. Arizona State over the weekend, Pete Thamel, latest story that he released to by Yahoo, that the Sun Devils have put a temporary hold on one of their assistant coaches. So the fallout is starting to happen. If I'm to believe those that are in the know, those that know the inner workings, when they talk to Yahoo and Pete Thamel about, yeah, the coaches there never use their phones or very seldom use their phones that were given to them by the university, and an AP would come in and drop three phones down in front of them. Do I think that that happens everywhere? Sure I do, okay? But even yesterday, the most ardent ASU boosters, supporters are texting me with, well, we had too many loose lips and so on and so forth. And I just kind of look at it and say, I thought you guys wanted a clean program. So tomorrow, here's what's going to happen. I'm going to get on a plane. I'm going to go to Pac-12 Football Media Day. I'm going to be sitting in there and someone up front is going to ask, because I am probably not going to, unless people are just scared out of their minds, say, hey, Herm, you need to address these questions, these reports, because he's going to say off the very top, he will be told by ASU, all you're going to say is, I cannot speak about any reports. I'm more than happy to talk about Jaden Daniels. I'm more than happy to talk about any players. I'm more than happy to talk about our season opener. That's all we're focused on. Herm, can you discuss what Pete Thamel? I can't discuss any reports. I'm more than happy to talk to you about the season. Herm, so was this hurting your recruit? I am not allowed to. I'm not going. That's what's going to happen. It's going to happen. And so I'm not saying that it's not a story. Obviously it is. But tomorrow's going to be a stonewall. I'm more interested tomorrow in what the new commissioner of the Pac-12 is going to say. When at 8 a.m. tomorrow morning I'm sitting in there and he starts talking and being asked about, what do you think about what the SEC is doing by raiding Oklahoma and raiding Texas, and is Arizona State open for business? I've been one of those that has said through the years, you don't need to be in the Pac-12 conference. It's a bad, bad, bad media deal. It's a terrible media deal in terms of dollars that come into the conference. If an assistant coach gets pursued by a bigger program outside of the Pac-12, ASU is going to lose all day long because they just simply can't afford to pay him. When the Big Ten is getting almost $20 million more per school per year because of their media rights deal, and I know you don't want to hear about this stuff, but I think it's important to understand why do I have this stance of get out of the Pac-12 if they can't get their media deal together? Get over to the Big 12. You're better off playing Oklahoma State on Big Fox in the middle of the day than sitting around in a hotel in Pullman, Washington to play on the Pac-12 network in front of family and friends that can't even see it. And you'll get paid more. It's a no-brainer. So tomorrow, that is the most interesting thing to me. Yeah, Jaden Daniels, Chase Lucas are going to be there. It's fine. Jaden signed a pizza deal with Venezia's, one of our partners. It's great. He's got an NIL thing. I'm going to ask him what kind of pie does he like. I don't know. We'll have some fun with it. But tomorrow is a huge day now with the news earlier this morning of Oklahoma and Texas and what they're going to do. Devin Booker. So when was the last time Devin Booker lost five games in a row? Well, we could go back to many, 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 many times the last few years. But Devin Booker with the Olympic Games starting yesterday, and they end up losing. And he goes one of four from the floor. And he's sitting there on the bench, and he's lost five games in a row. And, you know, Greg Popovich is revered in San Antonio. He's loathed here in Phoenix, though Monty Williams, you know, he helped Monty quite a bit. But Greg Popovich is now sitting there on a sideline where Team USA, they play Iran next. And I feel like it's poor Iran. It's kind of like when Charles was on the 84 team and they just destroyed squads. I got to believe that the next time out that they're going to go take care of business. I have to believe that. I sit here today and I don't believe they're going to win the gold medal. So what has to happen for our basketball in our country when it comes to the Olympic Games? Or is it simply, you know what, Olympic basketball is not that big of a deal to us. What matters is what the Milwaukee Bucks did. It's win the championship. I mean, we don't have Steph Curry over there, Brad. The Olympics, Olympic basketball, You know, we have the players. Kevin Durant was over there playing yesterday, and he didn't look good at all. Couldn't shoot straight. And you have Jason Tatum and Kevin Durant. You're bringing Devin Booker off the bench. You've got Drew Holiday, and you can't take care of Evan Fournier? So what does that mean? Does it mean we're in a space now, and I've said this before, where we're just not a tough nation when it comes to basketball? We don't like to play physical. We whine and cry off every call, don't we? When you watch an NBA game, there's so much acting and flopping and whining and crying. Then you get in the international game, and we don't care who you are. Boom, boom. We're going to beat you up. So is it time to get a coach that's not Greg Popovich, who is putting in a ton of time with the San Antonio Spurs? Is it time to get a coach that all he does is he coaches, or she coaches even, the Olympic men's basketball team? That's all they do. So they would go scout. They would look at players and say, what's the best fit? You know, when this team was initially put together, Pop had Kevin Love on it. Kevin Love is probably one of the happiest people in America right now. He's not part of this because he would be getting crushed. He would be. I look at the makeup of the team. I look at the body language of the team. It's just kind of like, huh. And there are great players that have said, yeah, I don't think I really need, I'm too well to attend. I'm Steph Curry. I don't need to be there. I'm LeBron James. I don't need to be there. I'm Trae Young. I don't need to be invited there. You know, is it going a different direction with young players rather than the veteran guys that have already been through an NBA season? I think we're all scared to death here in Phoenix of how Devin Booker is going to look when he comes out of this and has a very short off season and the NBA ramps it back up next year. I think we're all going to be saying, yeah, he's going to have to have some load management unless Monty sees it differently. But I would think he would. It's a tough deal for USA basketball. It's just not pleasant to watch. Are they going to win the gold medal? Do you believe they're still going to win a gold medal? I think that's a very fair question to ask. I'm of the opinion that they're not. And beyond that, we have the NHL draft this week. We have the Diamondbacks dumping bodies this week in all likelihood. So there's just a ton that is going on here in the Coyotes with the move of Oliver Ekman-Larsson and Shane Doan's son being drafted. We'll get into that with Evan Orschwitz here a little bit later on in the show. But for now, we step aside. And on the other side, Brett McMurphy with Stadium. The breaking news a couple of hours ago of the SEC with Texas and Oklahoma. The ramifications. What's it mean for the Fiesta Bowl here in the Valley? What does it mean for Arizona State and looking at other conferences? Should they look at the Big 12? Should they go raid the Big 12 and bring them into the Pac-12? Is this a minor league now compared to the SEC? Very fair questions to ask. We'll do that with Brett McMurphy, and that's next. All right, as promised, tomorrow we will be at the W Hotel in Hollywood, and with the news going on with the SEC in Texas and Oklahoma, I am sure tomorrow is just going to be a barrel of laughs. We have the Herm Edwards situation in Arizona State, new coach at U of A, what's USC thinking about all this SEC movement, and to give some clarity on some fronts, because it is a breaking story as we speak, it's Brett McMurphy with Stadium. It's great to have him back with us, College Football Insider. Okay, I'm going to throw some names at you right off the top of this and just give me a quick thought here, schools. What are Clemson, Ohio State, and USC thinking at this hour, seeing what Oklahoma and Texas are doing going to the SEC, Brett?
Of those three, I really think USC is the only one that could be impacted. Ohio State's in the Big Ten. Their media rights deal is comparable with the SEC. They're simply not going anywhere. The Big Ten may add a member. Clemson is in the ACC, not quite as lucrative as the SEC, but look, they're locked into a 15-year media rights deal. They ain't going anywhere. USC, though, they're in the Pac-12, and that's what's going to be fascinating and certainly what the conference will discuss. Tomorrow, sources I talked to last week said, look, we're going to have a call Monday before media day and kind of figure out what all's going on with Texas and Oklahoma and how that impacts us. Basically, what the Pac-12 and the other conferences have to decide is, do we stay at 12 or do we feel the need to get to 16? Mm-hmm. The main reason conferences expand is to increase more value per team to the league. Adding OU in Texas does that for the SEC. I don't know necessarily if the USC adds any of the remaining Texas schools, maybe Oklahoma State. I don't know anyone out there realistically that may add value to the Pac-12 per school, but maybe they feel like there's strength in numbers.
What is Oklahoma State feeling today?
Hey, I'm an Oklahoma State grad. It's a lot of uncertainty right now. I know that from people that I've talked to there, they hope that the Pac-12 will come calling. They hope maybe the Big Ten would look at them. The Big Ten prefers AAU institutions like Iowa State and Kansas. So I think Oklahoma State really has two good options, and that is the eight remaining schools in the Big 12 stay a conference. That means all the other conferences would have to stay pat. Or the second option is if the Pac-12 decides they want to go to 16 and they look at the remaining Big 12 schools, and certainly I think Oklahoma State would be attractive and possibly some of those remaining Texas schools to get that Texas recruiting into the Pac-12 footprint.
Brett McMurphy with us with Stadium. I have to think that these games this year that are in conference with Big 12 against Oklahoma and Texas are going to be nasty. I have to believe that fan bases are going to be I don't know how crazy they're going to get, but I would have to believe an Oklahoma State fan base or even all the way up into the governor's office is saying, what is going on here? How could this happen? How could you blindside us? Am I overstating it, do you think?
Absolutely not. And, you know, Oklahoma State's president put out a statement a couple of days ago how disappointed she was by the lack of transparency from Oklahoma, which usually Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are good partners. Hey, I don't blame Oklahoma. They made this move. They're taking care of their university, their athletic department for the next 50, the next 100 years. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's how drastic this move is. But hey, circle November 27th, Oklahoma comes to Stillwater. Bedlam will be like no other bedlam. I can guarantee that.
You know, you talk about transparency, and I think of Chris Del Conte, who did a terrific job at TCU, and now he's at Texas, and he's doing all this, and he built up TCU into this great program. Is there anything you look at Chris Del Conte, or do you think fans are tilting their head about him and all this? Or is it just, look, Brad, this is just business?
This is just business. If you're a Texas fan, you're starting to build a statue of Del Conte right now. I mean, you're getting into the SEC, the most powerful conference, the richest conference. They're increasing their media rights by perhaps some have estimated almost $20 million a year more in revenue that you're going to see. Mm-hmm. You know, look, I think it, myself and a lot of people in throughout college athletics thought that at some point we would get to these 16 team super conferences. So if that's going to happen, do you want to be the first to get to 16 and have your choice of the litter? Or do you want to wait until the very end? And then the pickings aren't so great.
One other name I want to throw out, and that's Greg Sankey. Where does he come in on all of this, the commissioner of the SEC? He feels to me like the czar of college football, Brett.
Yeah, he really does. And again, SEC fans are ecstatic, I'm sure, and people outside the SEC are saying, look, you're adding two teams, and this is gonna impact college athletics. The domino effects won't be felt for 10 or 20 years. Mm. We may see the Big 12 implode. We currently have 10 conferences. When I talk to you in a few more years, we may be down to 9 conferences if there's no Big 12, and people are going to blame Sankey for it. But look, the SEC presidents are also on board for this. But again, look, as we've seen throughout the past dozen years or so, you either go attract schools to come to your league or people come and grab schools to leave your league. It's whether we like it or not, college athletics is a big business, and this is Exhibit 1A.
Brett McMurphy with us with Stadium. Before I get you out of here, I want to localize this as best as possible. And I get it that the story is evolving even as we speak. The media rights story came out earlier today. If you're in the Fiesta Bowl offices, what are you looking at as this face of college football is just changing? This grand tradition bowl game here in the Valley, we already feel like it's under siege with Las Vegas sitting there with a new stadium. A move like this, is it going to impact the bowl system, do you believe?
Well, I think the 12-team playoff that they previously announced this summer will impact the bowl system a lot more than the expansion. I don't think the realignment necessarily will impact the bowl system that much. There will be upheaval with the 12-team playoff. However, the Fiesta Bowl is in great shape. They're one of the New Year's Six. I fully expect them to be in the rotation in this new 12-team format, whether it's quarterfinal games, semifinal games. Certainly they can bid to host the national championship. So as long as they stay in that upper tier, which there is no indication that they wouldn't be there. Mm-hmm. I know myself personally, I love the trip out west. Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of other people do. And more importantly, it makes a lot of sense for the higher ups involved in college athletics. Obviously, Las Vegas is a threat, but I think Las Vegas just adds another location to come out west, because currently right now there's basically the Rose Bowl and the Fiesta Bowl, and the Rose Bowl is not capable of hosting these type of games. So I think the Fiesta Bowl is in great standing. Of course, it takes money. As long as they want to stay up in the big boy leagues, they'll stay up there. It's gonna take more cash, but they certainly are welcome.
I've said and talked through the years here in Phoenix, and I've been in the Valley almost 30 years now, that they have to look at the bad TV deal that the Pac-12 network has been and struggled with. And they have to look at the Big 12 with the TV deal of Fox, just looking at pure television moves, that it would make some sense, a lot of sense financially and distribution-wise to go to the Big 12. Now that it looks like the Big 12 is imploding, zero in on Arizona State, because U of A's football program has bottomed out. They're starting to come back up. But zero in on Arizona State and just give me a look, Brad, in all of this, they're not going to be one of those that could be pursued. Ray Anderson is very savvy, Brett. You know this. Mm-hmm. I would find it hard to believe that Michael Crow would be sitting on the sideline, the president of the university, watching all this, to saying, okay, we're good where we're at. What are your thoughts? Early on, I know.
Yeah, no. Well, I would have said 6 months ago, I had heard talk that the Big 12 may pursue Arizona State, perhaps maybe a Utah or Colorado, and to get their numbers up to 14. Maybe everybody wants USC. I don't know how realistic that was, but I'd heard that discussions throughout the Big 12 is a possibility. Obviously, that's off the table now. The Pac-12 much more in a much more dominant position in the Big 12. And so Arizona State's fine. Arizona's fine. They're aligned with the Pac-12. The question is, do they want to go east and add these Big 12 teams? Some people have recommended the Big 10 and the Pac-12 merging to a 20-team league. I don't think that's feasible. How in the world's West Virginia gonna play on the West Coast? But I think basically Arizona State and Arizona are in a great position as long as they're aligned with the Pac-12. If I'm the new commissioner Pac-12, I kick the tires on Oklahoma State, on the Texas schools. I get the consultants to tell me the TV money doesn't make sense.
Yep.
More importantly, whether it does or doesn't, do a scheduling agreement with the Big Ten. Do a home and home with all the Big Ten members and the non-conference. They were going to do that several years ago. It never came to fruition. I think that would be goal one. Then you've got 9 solid conference games. You're guaranteed a Big Ten opponent in the non-conference. And I think that sets your conference up great, not only fan-wise, but more importantly, attractive to TV networks that want to televise those games.
I'll finish with this, and that was the question I asked you off the top about Clemson, Ohio State, and you said, you know, they're fine where they are with their long-term deals. The idea that people are just going to run to want to be with the SEC, you're not buying into that then, it sounds like, off the top.
No, because, again, really the only schools at this point that the SEC could add that would add more value per school would be like an Ohio State, a Michigan, or Notre Dame. Mm-hmm. Notre Dame is contractually tied into the ACC until 2036. So if they join a conference before 2036, it has to be the ACC. And again, 16 is such a perfect number. When conferences went up to 14, I had a number of college administrators tell me 12 is very good. 14 is a horrible number as far as scheduling. 16 is optimum. Mm. So, yeah, I don't think the SEC is just looking to add teams just to add teams. But as we say that, as soon as I hang up the phone, you know, the SEC may expand to 24. So, but yeah, seriously, yeah, right. They're set at 16. And I don't see anyone going beyond 16 because, again, the pie can only be so big. And then you've got more mouths to feed by the more members you add.
Well, I know with news breaking today, I appreciate you taking some moments. We're really looking forward to less than 24 hours from now, sitting in the press conference with the new commissioner of the Pac-12 and hearing what he has to say. Thanks, Brett, for the time today.
You got it. Thank you.
There's Brett McMurphy, and you can find all of his content on the Stadium Network. Terrific job there. We appreciate his time, and we're back with more after this time out. All right, from the chaos in college football with the SEC, and we thank again Brett McMurphy with Stadium, we're going to turn our attention now here locally to what's going on with the Coyotes. Evan Orshowitz with Sports 360 AZ is with us for a few minutes. He covers the Coyotes, does some general reporting, does great work, and he's all about what's going on with the hockey team here in the Valley. Excited to have him on board. All right, I'm going to run this by you, partner. You want to start with Shane Doan's son being drafted, trading Oliver Ekman-Larsson, getting a new coach, or talking with Tempe about a potential move. Which way do you want to go first, Evan? Fire away.
Well, I think the most pressing of those issues is the Oliver Ekman-Larsson trade. I mean, it's not every day you see a captain, face of the franchise, get moved in a blockbuster deal right before the draft. And there's some people who are portraying this as a salary dump on the part of the Coyotes. I don't see it that way at all. The way I see it, Bill Armstrong, the Coyotes general manager, killed two birds with one stone here. The first revolves around the draft picks they got in this deal. His game plan this entire offseason has been to recuperate some of the draft picks that were lost under the John Shaker regime, whether that was through trades or through the illegal combine testing that resulted in the forfeiture of their first round pick in this draft. He was able to trade back into the top 10 where they drafted Dylan Gunther, who a lot of people thought was the best goal scorer in this draft. So that was a win. He gets an extra second round pick next year, which is supposed to be a very good draft. And three roster players. We'll see what his plans are for those guys. And the other part of it is he unloads a contract in Ekman Larson that was already starting to look a little bit shaky with 6 years left on the deal. And while he's still a good player, definitely still a top four defenseman, definitely still a guy who can score around 40 points a season, his play had declined a little bit and he wasn't living up to his contract. So in the flat cap era with the salary cap staying at $81.5 million for the foreseeable future, you need flexibility there. And this was a means of getting that done. And as far as Connor Garland is concerned, he's a good player, but they weren't negotiations with him weren't going very well. So he's able to get some value for him. And I think all around, it's a win for the Coyotes.
Shane Doan's son comes on board, softens the blow for some fans and gets them excited on another front. I think you make great points here about Ekman Larson. Talk about this draft pick a little bit.
Well, it's not a publicity stunt. We'll start there. Josh Doan is a guy who has NHL projectable size. He's already 6'2". He won a championship in the USHL last year. And if not for his being an overager, which means he was draft eligible last year, wasn't picked, and the fact that some scouts weren't really sold on his skating, he probably would have gone in the first round. So I think it's a good value pick. They definitely need scoring. That's been an issue for many, many years. So getting two solid wingers in the pipeline in Doan and Dylan Gunther is a great step in the right direction. It's going to be a few years before we see him in the lineup because he's committed to ASU. Mm-hmm. But fans in the Valley will still be able to watch him with the Sun Devils. And I think they'll like his game a lot. He's a guy with some bite to him. We mentioned the size, obviously, but he's got great puck skills, great instincts, and he should be at least a solid top nine forward in the NHL.
Okay, fill fans in on the part of him playing at ASU with the Coyotes having their rights. Not a lot of people are aware of what goes on with that.
So he has signed a letter of intent to play for ASU, which means he's going to be there for at least this coming season. In order for him to fully join the Coyotes organization, he has to sign an entry-level NHL contract, which as of right now has not happened. Just because of how raw he is right now, I would assume he's going to play at least 2 years in college, but we'll see what happens on that front.
Okay. A couple other things I'll get you out of here. Evan Orshowitz with us talking about the Coyotes chopping it up. New head coach. You like the hire? What do you think?
I do like the hire. And it was clear from the beginning that Bill Armstrong wanted somebody who was a first-time NHL head coach. And André Tourigny is that. He has a lot of experience on the junior level. His teams in Ottawa, specifically in the Ontario Hockey League, were very well-regarded. He's a three-time coach of the year in the OHL and QMJHL, which is the top level of Canadian major junior hockey. And he's spent the last couple of years coaching Canadian international teams. He was the coach at the World Juniors this past year where they won silver. He was an assistant on their world championship side for the men where he coached a few members of the Coyotes. He's got a breadth of experience, and he's going to change things up stylistically as well, which I think is the biggest thing here. Mm-hmm. Under Rick Tocchet, the Coyotes were known as a good defensive team, not the fastest group, not the most skilled group. And Tourigny's teams in the CHL were known for being very fast, playing with a lot of pace, and being tough to play against. And we're already seeing Bill Armstrong sort of catering the roster towards those traits with some of the moves he's made this offseason.
Okay, before I get you out of here, the news, I wouldn't say news, the rumblings of conversation, paper exchange between the Coyotes and City of Tempe. What do you make out of that? It's always out there, Evan. This is always a story around this team. Do they want to get out of Glendale? Seems pretty apparent they do. Houston's always sitting out there. The ownership group says we want to stay here in Phoenix. What are you hearing there?
Well, the first thing is that the Morello group has made it clear since they took over that they want to keep this team in Arizona. They didn't say they wanted to keep the team in Glendale. And the way their leasing agreement at Gila River worked, it's pretty clear that they're not committed to it long term. It's a year-to-year deal. They can opt out at any time. And this is not the first time we've heard proposals about an arena in Tempe. There was obviously that deal they had, the prospective deal in conjunction with ASU a few years ago that fell through. this seems a little bit more realistic because they don't need another entity to partner with them, but it's still in its infancy. From what I understand, they've identified a piece of land in Tempe that they're interested in. They haven't purchased it yet. They haven't started building yet, obviously, but it's a good start. It's a good start. A lot of their fan base is in the East Valley. It's much more accessible to a lot of people than the current facility in Glendale is. So if this is something they decide to move forward with, I think you'll see a good impact on attendance in the future.
Last question, I promise now. You expect anything newsy in the next 6 weeks before training camp opens up, or 5 weeks before training camp opens up?
I do. Bill Armstrong has addressed the rumors surrounding other players on the Coyotes roster who are still on the roster. But he said they might have to be patient on that. But it's clear that he's not done building this roster. Free agency starts on Wednesday, and they have a lot of holes to fill. There's a lot of expiring contracts, a lot of guys who probably aren't coming back. So I would assume he's going to be active on the UFA market, and I would expect a couple more trades here, because I think this offseason is really his first chance to sort of reconstruct the roster to his liking and to the new coach's liking. Last year was more of a, hey, we'll see what we have here. We'll see if this team can contend or not. Clearly, they weren't able to with their fifth place finish in the West Division. So I would expect a fair amount of changes between here and opening night.
Biggest name to move potentially this week then?
Well, I don't like to speculate, but some names that have been discussed in trade talks are Darcy Kemper. Obviously, he's got 1 year left on his contract. He's had trouble staying healthy these last 2 years, but he's still a very good goalie. So if they did decide to move in that direction, they would be able to get some value for him for sure. Christian Dvorak's another one. But with them letting go of Garland, their second really sort of empty right now. So I would assume they hold on to him. But those are just a couple of names that have been mentioned.
That's Evan Orshowitz. Great job there inside on the Coyotes. And we're back with more after this timeout.